door. But you're afraid to try, because if it doesn't start, what then? She was reaching for the ignition again, when the dog stumbled back into view. It had been lying out of sight in front of the Pinto. Now it moved slowly toward the barn, its head down and its tail drooping. It was staggering and weaving like a drunk near the bitter end of a long toot. Without looking back, Cujo slipped into the shadows of the building and disappeared. She drew her hand away from the key again.
Mommy, aren't we going?
Let me think, hon, she said. She looked to her left, out the driver's side window. 8 running steps would take her to the back door of the Camber house. In high school, she had been the star of her high school's girls' track team, and she still jogged regularly. She could beat the dog to the door, and inside, she was sure of that. There would be a telephone. 1 call to Sheriff Bannerman's office, and this horror would end. On the other hand, if she tried cranking the engine again, it might not start, but it would bring the dog on the run. She knew hardly anything about rabies, but she seemed to remember reading at some time, rather, that rabid animals were almost supernaturally sensitive to sounds. Loud noises could drive them into a frenzy.
Mommy?
Dad, shh. 8 running steps. Dig it. Even if Cujo was lurking and watching inside the garage just out of sight, she felt sure, she knew she could win a foot race to the back door. The telephone, yes. And a man like Joe Camber surely kept a gun, maybe a whole rack of them. What pleasure it would give her to blow that fucking dog's head to so much oatmeal and strawberry jam. 8 running steps. Sure, dig on it a while. And what if that door giving on the porch was locked? Worth the risk? Her heart thudded heavily in her breast as she weighed the chances. If she had been alone, that would have been one thing. But suppose the door was locked. She could beat the dog to the door, but not to the door and then back to the car. Not if it came running. Not if it charged her as it had done before. And what would Tad do? What if Tad saw his mother being savaged by a 200-pound mad dog, being ripped and bitten, being pulled open? No, they were safe here. Try the engine again. She reached for the ignition, and part of her mind clamored that it would be safer to wait longer until the engine was perfectly cool. Perfectly cool? They had been here 3 hours or more already. She grasped the key and turned it. The engine cranked briefly, once, twice, 3 times, and then caught with a roar. "Oh, thank God," she cried. "Mommy," Tad asked shrilly, "are we going? Are we going?" "We're going," she said grimly, and threw the transmission into reverse. Cujo lunged out of the barn and then just stood there watching. "Fuck you, dog," she yelled at it triumphantly. She touched the gas pedal. The Pinto rolled back perhaps 2 feet and stalled. "No," she screamed as the red idiot lights came on again. Cujo had taken another 2 steps when the engine cut out, but now he only stood there silently, his head down. "Watching me," the thought occurred again. His shadow trailed out behind him, as clear as a silhouette cut out of black crepe paper. Donna fumbled for the ignition switch and turned it from on to start. The motor began to turn over again, but this time it didn't catch. She could hear a harsh panting sound in her own ears and didn't realize for several seconds that she was making the sound herself. In some vague way, she had the idea that it must be the dog. She ground the starter, grimacing horribly, swearing at it, oblivious of Tad, using words she had hardly known she knew. And all the time, Cujo stood there, trailing his shadow from his heels, like some surreal funeral drape, watching. At last, he lay down in the driveway, as if deciding there was no chance for them to escape. She hated it more then than she had when it had tried to force its way in through Tad's window.
"Mommy! Mommy! Mommy!"
From far away, unimportant. What was important now was this goddamn son-of-a-bitching little car. It was going to start. She was going to make it start by pure force of will. She had no idea how long in real time she sat hunched over the wheel, with her hair hanging in her eyes, futilely grinding the starter. What at last broke through to her was not Tad's cries. They had trailed off to whimpers. But the sound of the engine. It would crank briskly for 5 seconds, then lag off. Then crank briskly for another five. Then lag off again. A longer lag each time, it seemed. She was killing the battery. She stopped. She came out of it a little at a time, like a woman coming out of a faint. She remembered a bout of gastroenteritis she'd had in college. Everything inside her had either come up by the elevator or dropped down the chute. And near the end of it, she had grayed out in one of the dorm toilet stalls. Coming back had been like this, as if you were the same, but some invisible painter was adding color to the world, bringing it first up to full and then to over-full. Colors shrieked at you. Everything looked plastic and phony, like a display in a department store window, swing into spring, perhaps, or ready for the first kickoff. Tad was cringing away from her, his eyes squeezed shut, the thumb of one hand in his mouth. The other hand was pressed against his hip pocket, where the monster words were. His respiration was shallow and rapid. "Tad," she said, "honey, don't worry."
"Mommy, are you all right?"
His voice was little more than a husky whisper. "Yeah, so are you. At least we're safe. This old car will go. Just wait and see."
"I thought you were mad at me."
She took him in her arms and hugged him tight. She could smell sweat in his hair and the lingering undertone of Johnson's No More Tears shampoo. She thought of that bottle sitting safely and sanely on the second shelf of the medicine cabinet in the upstairs bathroom. If only she could touch it. But all that was here was that faint, dying perfume. "No, honey, not at you," she said. "Never at you." Tad hugged her back.
"He can't get us in here, can he?"
"No."
"He can't. He can't eat his way in, can he?"
"No."
"I hate him," Tad said reflectively. "I wish he'd die."
"Yes, me too." She looked out the window and saw that the sun was getting ready to go down. A superstitious dread settled into her at the thought. She remembered the childhood games of hide-and-seek that had always ended when the shadows joined each other and grew into purple lagoons. That mystic call drifting through the suburban streets of her childhood, talismanic and distant. The high voice of a child announcing suppers that were ready, doors ready to be shut against the night. "Ollie, Ollie, and free, Ollie, Ollie, and free." The dog was watching her. It was crazy, but she could no longer doubt it. Its mad, senseless eyes were fixed, unhesitatingly, on hers. "No, you're imagining it. It's only a dog, and a sick dog at that. Things are bad enough without you seeing something in that dog's eyes that can't be there." She told herself that. A few minutes later, she told herself that Cujo's eyes were like the eyes of some portraits which seem to follow you wherever you move in the room where they are hung. But the dog was looking at her, and there was something familiar about it. "No," she told herself, and tried to dismiss the thought, but it was too late. "You've seen him before, haven't you? The morning after Tad had the first of his bad dreams, the morning that the blankets and sheets were back on the chair, his teddy on top of them. And for a moment, when you opened the closet door, you only saw a slumped shape with red eyes, something in Tad's closet ready to spring. It was him. It was Cujo. Tad was right all along. Only the monster wasn't in his closet. It was out here. It was..." "Stop it. Out here, just waiting to..." "You stop it, Donna." She stared at the dog and imagined she could hear its thoughts, simple thoughts. The same simple pattern repeated over and over in spite of the whirling boil of its sickness and delirium. "Kill the woman. Kill the boy. Kill the woman. Kill..." "Stop it," she commanded herself roughly. "It doesn't think, and it's not some goddamned boogeyman out of a child's closet. It's a sick dog, and that's all it is. Next you'll believe the dog is God's punishment for committing..." Cujo suddenly got up, almost as if she had called him, and disappeared into the barn again. "Almost as if..."